I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to The Connection. Did you dream last night? Chances are you did, even if you can't remember what you dreamt. It's something we humans do when we're asleep. In fact, there are some common universal themes involving the content of our dreams. We've all had dreams of falling, of being attacked, being chased, being late. We've had dreams of being in school and taking tests we never studied for, dreams about erotic experiences. Today on the show, what we are learning about the science and psychology of dreaming. Why do we need to dream? What's happening in our brain? What can our dream world tell us about our waking life? Why are our dreams so strange and hard to remember? What do recurring nightmares mean? So many questions. Our guest, Deirdre Barrett, is a psychologist and dream researcher at Harvard University, the author of several books, including Pandemic Dreams and the Committee of Sleep. She's the president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams and editor-in-chief of the journal Dreaming. Deirdre Barrett, nice to have you with us today on The Connection.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
Very happy to have you. Let us begin with the brain. When we go to sleep, and hopefully we're relaxing and we're having that nice restorative sleep, what is going on in our brains when we are dreaming?
Well, when we first fall asleep, we go through some other stages in which we don't usually dream. And about 90 minutes into sleep, we go into something called rapid eye movement sleep. It's named that because you see the eyes flickering around, making movements under the eyelids very distinctively if you're watching the sleeper. But the brain is also becoming more active at that stage. It's been less active through the rest of sleep. And as we hit rapid eye movement sleep, the first thing that was discovered was the brain reactivates to about the same average level as when we're awake. In the decades since that was discovered, we've been able to refine imaging so that we see that actually some areas are even more active than awake and some less so. But the brain gets very active during rapid eye movement sleep, and that's when most, but oddly not quite all, of the things that we recall as dreams happen.
Well, even going deeper into that, I was reading about something called the executive network. I guess it's in the prefrontal cortex, that gets either turned off or turned down, while something called the imagination network kind of gets revved up. Now, I'm not a scientist, so you can correct me if I'm not using the right language there.
Yeah.
But is that sort of what happening?
I would have said secondary visual cortex for what you're calling the imagination network. But yes, that's very much what the secondary visual cortex, which has to be active when we're awake because it's also making images out of what our eyes are seeing coming through the primary visual cortex. But it's even more active than when we're awake. And the prefrontal cortex is damped down. It's not entirely shut off. And during certain kinds of dreams, like lucid dreams, it actually becomes somewhat more active again. That's how we figure out we're dreaming in lucid dreams. But most of REM sleep, it is less active than when we're awake.
Is that why we dream in stories, if I can put it that way?
It's not so much why we can tell stories, but it's why we can't do a lot of tight logic. Why the vast majority of our dreams, we don't question impossible things happening. We do not go, wait a minute, this can't be happening. You know, what accounts for this? And go, oh, I must be dreaming, which we do very occasionally when that prefrontal is more active than typical for REM. But it's definitely the reason that we can't do good reality testing. And then those are just the two areas that have the biggest difference in activity, but actually areas associated with emotion are a little more active on average. Ones associated with language are not as active as average for awake, but we still have some language activity potentially going on.
Is that why, even if we can't remember what it is that we dreamed, we can feel the emotion associated with that dream?
That's a good question. That's kind of a leading hypothesis, although there hasn't been any research that, like, clearly proves the one causes the other. But since they're both going on, that's a very probable explanation.
For the dreamer, why do we dream? Do we need to dream?
There are almost as many answers to that as there are dream researchers. And there are some of the more neuroscience type people feel like there's no need to dream per se, that the need is for the brain to go into rapid eye movement sleep to turn off some neurotransmitters to be replenished, to ramp up others, to get them used, to maintain some degree of brain activity through the night. And that some of the very neuroscience-oriented people who think of themselves as studying REM sleep more than dreams, they would say that dreams are a side effect of REM sleep, which is what's necessary. I am not in that camp. Most psychologists believe that dreams also have some functions, and that describing why REM sleep exists and why dreams exist are just two very different approaches to related things. But there have been theories about why we dream. From Freud, thought they were necessary for wish fulfillment, so sleep would not be disturbed, and that all dreams were granting wishes, even the negative ones, were doing that in a roundabout way. And there's a psychologist named Revenansu in Finland who says that dreams are threat simulation, and explains even the positive ones as being sort of, it's the exact mirror image of Freud's theory that they're all about wishes, that they're all about threats and practicing threats. I personally think that asking why we dream or what dreams are for is almost like asking what is waking thought for. That you either wouldn't ask the question, or you would expect, you know, a book, not a one sentence kind of answer. I think dreams are for everything. I think they're doing a little bit of all the things our waking thought is. They're about our wishes and fears and hopes and dreams and practical planning, and they're about our emotional lives and our practical objective professional pursuits also sometimes, and that just about anything that we think about awake can show up in a dream. But because the brain is acting much more visually, we have more intense visual imagery going on, both in the artistic sense, but also like for the breakthrough problems that have occurred in dreams. Many more of them are kind of 3D visualizable inventions than very abstract ones. And we're thinking less logically by a lot and less verbally by a little bit. But I think dreams are just a little bit for everything, and can help us with anything that our waking thought helps us with.
Well, I really like that, because it is a bit of an all of the above answer, but I think it really taps into this sort of connection between our waking life and our dream life or our dream state. Do you see it as a kind of avenue then to our unconscious?
Yes, definitely. And more specifically than that, because unconscious gets used in a lot of senses, I think it accesses some of our visual thinking abilities, some of our intuition, more powerfully than we typically do awake. I think we can think outside the box more in the state of REM sleep. And then we are going to be thinking on average less logically and a bit less verbally. But some of the things we can do with visualization and with thinking outside the box make up for that.
I mean, it sounds like you're describing it. It's part of the creative process, and it is a kind of outside of the box thinking.
Yes, yes. And that, by the way, is related back to the fact that our prefrontal cortex is damped down quite a bit because the prefrontal cortex not only is kind of where we do logical reasoning, but it's also where censorship lies, both censorship in the Freudian sense of, oh, no, that's not nice, you can't do that, but also in the sense of censoring for conventional wisdom, like a chemist would know that to figure out the molecular structure of this, the things that are possible are this, and the things that are impossible are this other group, and these are the steps you usually go through. And so, like with Kekulé and the benzene ring, which was a unique molecule that was not shaped like any other known chemical compound, he was able to see the structure of benzene in a dream rather specifically, because he wasn't going, oh, no, none of them are closed circles. No, they're all straight lines with side chains. So we think outside the box exactly because we don't have the sensor telling us, no, that's outside the box. Don't go there.
It's something to remember in our waking world to put that sensor where he or she belongs. But it's so interesting that, as you describe it, it's making sense of our world, but often through things that seem nonsensical or fantastic or bizarre.
Yes. Yes, definitely. When you let go of your prefrontal cortex guidance, that's exactly what we usually mean by bizarre and nonsensical. And once we wake up and the prefrontal cortex is turned on fully, it's often going,
that's right.
Oh, that's nonsense. Which it is if you're regarding it from a waking linear logic, but it often has an intuitive, creative, artistic truth to it.
Deidre, I read that you were a very vivid dreamer at a pretty early age, like 5, 6, 7 years old. Do you have memories of that?
Yes. And I think that's true of many dream researchers. I mean, you have to like just happen to be at a grad school where somebody's got a huge research program going on to get interested in dreams if you're not already fascinated by your own dreams. So, yes, I remember dreams, I think, dimly back to age 3, but especially by 4 and 5, I remember that. Not just do I remember some dreams, but I remember that I was fascinated by dreams and asking people about dreams. And so it was a very natural route from talking about dreams through my childhood to figuring out that I better major in psychology and go to graduate school. And I did clinical, but you could have done neuroscience or personality psychology or some other PhD closely related to dreams. So you would get to continue to do that in your life.
And you get to do that on the radio. We're going to take a very short break talking with Deidre Barrett. She's a psychologist, dream researcher. And we are talking about dreams today on The Connection. And she's the president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, also editor-in-chief of the journal Dreaming. So she knows a lot about why we dream. Much more after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
You're listening to The Connection here on WHYY in Philadelphia, talking about why we dream, what our brain is doing while we sleep, how we can make use of the content of our dreams in our waking life. And again, our guest is dream researcher Deidre Barrett. Deidre, I remember interviewing you a couple of years ago when your book, your book called Pandemic Dreams was first published, and we were talking about the fact that as we were living through the pandemic, many people were having similar kinds of dreams. And I wonder whether that's true for, I'm thinking of September 11th or any kind of war that might be going on or a natural disaster. Are there certain themes associated with those kinds of national or even international crises that show up in people's dreams?
Yes, I did collect dreams after 9/11 happened and in a few other crises and traumatic situations. One thing that was kind of unique about the COVID pandemic was it was literally the whole world that was going through something at least similar at pretty much the same time, which we don't have in most crises. So that you saw the patterns around the world and across pretty much all cultures and at pretty much the same time was kind of unique. And the kinds of dreams that I recorded during COVID were certainly similar to other crisis dreaming in many, many ways. Just that the level of anxiety in dreams went up, more of the sort of mid-level anxiety dreams, more nightmares than in typical times. And some of the same kind of imagery standing in symbolically for the actual crisis going on. Humans have a tendency to represent crises as tidal waves and earthquakes and fires breaking out and things that I think are kind of instinctively, evolutionarily sort of tied in our imagery to fear. But then for the pandemic, there were also some recurring images for it that I had not seen in any other crises that were kind of specific to the nature of the threat, like invisible monsters. I don't think I'd ever had a PTSD dream with invisible monsters lurking. And that was a common thing that was threatening in the COVID situation. And swarms and swarms of bugs attacking the dreamer, any kind of bugs. It could be cockroaches or flying insects or masses of wriggling worms. But the idea of lots of little tiny things that cumulatively could harm or kill you seemed to make a really good metaphor for the virus that I hadn't seen with any other kind of threat. And then even I think just the word we use bug as slang for an infection and especially a virus, and yet it also means an insect.
Indeed. It's funny, I just scribbled the word metaphor. I mean, it does tell you a little bit that we can think in metaphor or in poetry, you know, using symbols to represent something else.
Yes, and I think it comes very naturally to the dream state for the reasons we were just talking about of our secondary visual cortex being even more active than when we're awake, that we tend to, we don't have to sort of make up a metaphor like we might if we were in our awake, logical, verbal state. We would think of something that would make a good metaphor for something, but it's more like that's the way our thinking is naturally occurring in symbols and in, the bug and bug is, you know, is almost just a sort of a sound association to the word. We're thinking in a mode that's just naturally a flow of metaphors and symbols and a lot of imagery.
It also seems, and there are certainly happy dreams that people have, but it seems that many of them, or even maybe even most of them, are about, as I mentioned in my introduction, being chased or being attacked or falling. Is dreaming a kind of problem-solving thing that we do as human beings?
I think it does just a little bit of everything and maybe a lot of problem solving or attempting to problem solve. I mean, dreams can really make big breakthroughs in problems that people are stuck on awake, both personal ones, but also even objective, scientific, artistic creation problems. But that's not to say that anytime our dreaming mind focuses on something like that, that it does succeed and come up with something brilliant. You also see just kind of repetitive, circular. The person is obviously concerned with the same problem. They are awake, but they're not always making any more progress at it than they have awake.
And why, when we're adults, let's say we're in our 40s, 50s, 60s, even older, Why do we dream about being given a test in school for a subject that we never studied and we forgot to get dressed that morning?
You know, I think that there are definitely some common themes in dreams, and some of them seem to be across all humans, things about falling and teeth falling out. I think maybe have some sort of common human meaning. Obviously, an anxiety dream about a test where you sit down and take an exam, that does tend to happen only in westernized cultures where we sit down in school for many years of our early lives, periodically taking these exams. And in a tribe that's still, you know, out there hunting and foraging, the equivalent would be much likelier to be one of these sort of the first time you have to hunt on your own, or the first time you have to figure out how to gather this or that plant is what authorities are evaluating you on. So I certainly think that the common sense things that most people would think of as a symbol for a test anxiety dream. I mean, we use the word test in many metaphoric ways, that you're being tested, you know, that an authority figure is evaluating you in some way, that often in the dream you're feeling like you're about to fail. That being naked is very, very often associated with social anxiety and shame and feeling inadequate in some shameful way. But actually, I still think that to interpret dreams, it's always important to get the individual dreamer's association, and that even those general themes are going to have some nuances. I mean, there are people who are exhibitionists or just very casual about nudity, and nudity will represent something different from them. Somebody who got most of their pride from being good at exams will dream about that differently. Also, there's some people who don't have the test anxiety dream even in our culture, but have something similar, like people who wanted to be an actor or a musician from a very early age and just didn't get very anxious about how they were performing on academic schoolwork, will tend to have that recurring dream where they're going to an audition. And it has all the same, they're trying to find the place where it's happened, they've studied the wrong script, they get there and, you know, and their instrument isn't functioning properly. It's very analogous, but it's not necessarily a test if how you did on academic exams was never a big deal.
Well, you're making me remember the dreams I had when I was a waitress. This was decades ago, where, you know, I'm given like 15 tables at once and they're all ordering at once, and the cook has left, and I'm, you know, there I am with my empty tray. I've had radio dreams forever that are a variation on that same theme, which is I forgot the book of the author who I was supposed to be interviewing. So it's interesting how these themes will show up in our current life, but they all seem to go back to this kind of chronic anxiety.
Yes. Yeah. And it's so commonly a test anxiety dream just because most of us did that for so many years, and other things that we repetitively did that stirred up similar sort of anxiety of failure are so unique, like to your radio job, or lots of us have been waitresses, but not as many as sat through all those school exams.
That is true. Let me just quickly reintroduce you. Deidre Barrett is our guest today on The Connection. She's a psychologist. She's a dream researcher at Harvard University. She's written several books, including Pandemic Dreams and The Committee of Sleep. She's currently the president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams and editor-in-chief of the journal Dreaming. And yes, we are talking about dreams and dreaming. Some people say that they don't dream, or they have never dreamed, and we'll get to can't remembering dreams, but do you think that's true, that there are people that do not dream?
No, or at least incredibly rare and having something neurologically quite different than most people. No, I mean, what's actually true is that most people don't remember most of their dream content. When we're in rapid eye movement sleep, when most dreams are occurring, the short-term memory is turned on, but the parts of our brain responsible for transferring things into long-term memory are not turned on. So you actually have to wake up from a dream to have any chance of recalling it, because as soon as you wake up, that long-term storage will get turned on. So most dreams, you sleep through into another stage of sleep, and the dream just has no chance at all of being recalled. And even if you wake up from the dream, it is hilarious how many people remember waking up in the middle of the night. Like when I'm doing workshops on dreams or teaching classes on dreams and encouraging people to get their dreams recorded, the number of times people tell me that they wake up in the middle of the night and they remember waking up thinking, oh my God, I finally remembered a really great dream, and this one's so vivid, I'm going to remember it clearly in the morning. I don't need to write it down right now. And that's all they remember in the morning, is knowing they had this really important dream that they were absolutely going to remember, and not a bit about what it is, because you have to not only wake up, but it's there in short-term memory. But if you don't kind of rehearse it in short-term memory, or preferably write it down or dictate it to your phone at the time, it's still very fragile and may get lost.
Well, and it does feel as if the dream is just literally evaporating. I mean, you wake up, you open your eyes, you know, your day begins, and that thing that seems so vivid when you woke up just disappears somehow.
Yeah, exactly. And people who say that they don't dream at all or they rarely dream, they're just an exaggeration of that dream forgetting that most of us do a lot of. And it's pretty normal range for people to say that they recall anywhere from a couple of dreams a year to more than one dream a night. I mean, it's sort of a bell-shaped normal distribution type curve, but normal range is huge extremes. And there's some people who say they haven't recalled a dream since they've been an adult, but who kind of remember that they did as children.
Hmm. That's fascinating. You draw your dreams, or you have drawn your dreams. You still do that?
It's the reverse of what you would mean by still. I didn't start making art from my dreams until about a little less than 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I always really loved art, and my favorite art was always literally from dreams, or at least very surreal and reminded me of my dreams, even if that's not how the artist had arrived at it. But I didn't feel like I had very good eye-hand coordination. And when I would try to even just sketch with a pen or pencil or paint something, I felt like I got a very crude representation of what I was trying to do. And it was frustrating. I mean, I did always over the years occasionally wake up and try to draw some compelling image, but I wasn't very happy with it. And it wasn't until I actually did this transition where I decided that I could take photographs of things and do lots of collaging and digital manipulation to make a scene that looked like the dream. And I did that for a while. And then when I couldn't find images of things, I started drawing over the collages a little bit digitally, but in a digital sketch or paint program, so that I could erase a line that didn't come out like I wanted and redraw it, and do that about 12 times, and I can usually get a drawing right. So I've now transitioned to where it looks like it was painted, but it's being painted with a stylus on a tablet, relying heavily on this erase button that takes out your last stroke and gives you a second chance at it, a third chance at it. And so, but I think also I just never used to practice enough to get steadier at what I was sketching. So I still need the cheat of being able to erase a lot. But I think by having that crutch, I've also gotten better at just the sketching in the first place.
Nothing wrong with an erase button, certainly in my world. I'm curious about whether speaking about who, maybe who dreams more or who remembers more, do women remember their dreams more than men, for instance?
That's a good intuitive thought. And yes, but it's a pretty mild difference. But if you're looking at large groups and doing statistics on them, it's a very significant but small difference in terms of women. There's also correlation with age. Through early childhood, dream recall is going up, but for very late childhood, teens, very early adulthood, it kind of reaches its peak. And then over the rest of the adult life, it's very gradually dropping on average.
You said that you were a pretty young child when you started to dream and had this ability to remember them. Do we know how young children are when they begin to dream? I would think you need to have language to some degree, but when do kids begin to dream?
Well, I mean, the parts of this question that I think really aren't answerable, because what we study are not, for the most part, dreams. Most of, quote, dream research is dream accounts that people wake up, remember, and tell somebody. I mean, there's some, quote, dream research that's about imaging going on while you're dreaming. And there's a group in Kyoto that has now figured out how to do extremely crude readings of cortical evoked potentials off the visual cortex so that they produce something that's slightly an image of the dream, but it's really, really messy, but it'll probably get better. But the vast majority of what we mean about dream research and dream interpretation and dream work is on the recalled dream. So back to kids.
Yeah.
Kids can't report dreams until they have some language, but almost as early as they have any effective language, they do seem to be reporting some dreams. But since we know that dreams are highly correlated with rapid eye movement sleep, we know that that is happening even in the later fetal stages. So it sort of makes sense to assume that subjectively people may be dreaming even for a while before they're born, but certainly from birth onward, but they can't tell anybody about it until they have language.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take another short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about dreams and dreaming with our guest, Deidre Barrett. She's a psychologist, a dream researcher, and we are picking her brain on just about all the aspects of dreams and dreaming and dreamers that we possibly can. Do stay with us much more after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to The Connection here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with Deidre Barrett. She's a psychologist dream researcher at Harvard University. As I've mentioned, she's written a couple of books about dreaming, one called Pandemic Dreams, the other The Committee of Sleep. I should add she's the president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams and editor-in-chief of the journal Dreaming. Well, let's talk a little bit about nightmares. And you even mentioned children, and I remember when our son was maybe about 7, 8, 9, 10, him coming into our bedroom, almost like sleepwalking, but nonetheless having this terrifying dream. He was probably half awake, half asleep. He said that the house is on the roof, the house is on the roof, which in his dream state, I guess, was terrifying. I mean, it made no sense. But nonetheless, that was the first I remember him having a true real nightmare. What do nightmares tell us?
Well, nightmares are, they're really two basically very different types. The first and more common is just a terrifying dream. They are strongly correlated with being in rapid eye movement sleep, just like other dreams. They have vivid imagery, some of the same kind of bizarre, surreal characteristics of most dreams, but they're really, really frightening. And just like many or most dreams are kind of metaphoric, they are usually metaphorically representing fear rather than having a very verbal, logical version of it. And those garden variety common nightmares are more common in childhood and tend to naturally diminish over time. So some parents get disturbed when their children are having nightmares. You know, obviously, empathically, you would. But it's really a pretty normal part of childhood. And it will, with most kids, just lessen on average quite naturally. And some people have more of those garden variety nightmares in adulthood than others. And that basically correlates mostly with two very different traits, but they both potentially contribute. One is just one's general anxiety level. If you give people measures of waking amount of anxiety and fears about things, that is going to correlate with their tendency to have nightmares when they sleep. So anxious by day, anxious by night. But the other thing, which is very different, is there's just a whole constellation of kind of vividness of dreams. Some people recall more dreams. The dreams they recall are more detailed. They describe them as more vivid, both emotionally and in terms of the intensity of the visual imagery. If you ask about rare categories, like have they ever had a flying dream? Have they ever had a dream in which they knew they were dreaming? They're likelier to say yes. So that just kind of intense dreamer cluster tends also to correlate with how many nightmares you have. But in a very different way than the waking anxiety does, because the people who get most of their nightmares from that intense dreamer characteristic will also be having more beautiful peak experience dreams than most people. They'll be flying around in their dreams more than most people. They just have more intense dreams, and nightmares are intense. But then others are getting more of it from being very fearful and anxious all the time, and that spilling over into their dream life.
Is there a connection between vivid dreaming and creativity, for instance? Are creative people, and that can run the gamut, are they more likely to dream or have certain vivid dreams?
Yes, most of the scales of creativity do correlate, kind of modestly, but correlate with dream recall and dream vividness. The creativity research field is kind of a mess in terms of a lot of creativity scales only correlate lightly with each other because we mean so many different things by that term.
About repetitive dreams, and I got an email from someone who talks about going to sleep and having this kind of repetitive, uncomfortable dream, and even thinking, well, maybe I'll just sort of hold off on sleeping so I don't have to go back and relive that dream. Is there something significant about repetitive dreams? Is our unconscious, if I can use it that way, trying to tell us something about something we have to deal with in our real life?
Well, there are two kinds of repetitive dreams, and that goes back to the two kinds of nightmares, and I only said the first. Second kind of nightmare is the post-traumatic nightmare, where something has really happened to you that's horrible in waking life, and you keep dreaming that, usually more literal than other dreams, and they're not just in REM, they cut across all sleep stages. So post-traumatic nightmares are this realistic thing, and everybody that has them is just completely terrified and re-traumatized by them and wishes they would stop. Whereas the garden variety nightmares, some people even enjoy those. Huh. I've heard people like multiple times make the analogy of it being kind of like going to a horror movie, that they are scared by it, but it's kind of exciting too. So back to recurring dreams. Some recurring dreams are PTSD nightmares, because the things that map onto a specific waking event are likely to recur as either the identical dream, because the event is unfolding just like it did in waking life, or at least a recurring category of dreams that are organized around getting raped or having a fire break out or getting in a crash or being in a war. So there's one kind of recurring dream that's pretty synonymous with the PTSD nightmares. But then other dreams that are fanciful and metaphoric can also recur. And again, sometimes exactly the same, and sometimes people just categorize it as very, very similar, even if there's slight variations each time. And those can be positive or negative. They're somewhat, even the garden variety recurring dreams, are somewhat likely to be nightmares or at least anxiety dreams than positive ones. But sometimes people have beautiful, awesome recurring dreams.
Oh, lucky them.
Uh-huh.
I said, no, lucky them. No.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
I thought that was an ironic. tell yourself tonight that the favorite dream you've ever had you'd like to have tonight and again in the future, and you might be able to develop one. But basically what we think is going on with recurring dreams is that it's simply a sort of deeper, more character logic issue that you're dreaming about if you dream it over and over. That other dreams may be sort of mostly determined by something that's happened that day or very recently that we're dreaming about, an immediate concern. And of course, that maps onto everything else about our personality, but it's still mostly about this particular thing that happened today. And we think that the recurring ones are mostly about something in our sort of mythological self story that we at least feel like keeps happening to us, that was very important in some developmental stage, that we just continue to deal with over and over as we encounter ongoing life situations. And so it's often advised that if you're not going to do much dream work or think about your dreams much or interpret them, that a good starting point might be, if you have a recurring dream, to focus on using interpretive techniques, what that is.
Well, let me pick up on that, and whether we can think then about our dreams as a kind of internal psychotherapist. I think that was a phrase I ran across in doing preparation for the show, that maybe we talk to somebody else, maybe we talk to a therapist, maybe we talk to ourselves. Because ourselves are telling us that there is something unresolved here.
Yes, definitely. We were talking a little while ago about some common dreams that lots of people have, like being naked in public and late for an exam. But I think that the more important elements of dreams are the ones that are a little bit individual. Even for those, there's sort of individual variations on what they're about. So instead of there are some dream dictionaries out there, which I think are just trash. And then there are some people approach dream interpretation as, oh, I've become an expert on what the universal symbols are. So if you dream about a dog, that is the masculine principle that, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's absolutely, you know, that's the quote dream interpreter telling you their associations to the dreams, and they're not the dreamers, so those are not the important associations. So I think that whether you're working on your own with your dream, or if you're working with a responsible dream psychologist, you yourself or they are going to be sort of asking you questions that help you get at your symbols. Like if you dream about a dog, they don't just start telling you what a dog might be in standard symbolism. They would say, just tell me about a dog. Pretend I don't know anything about a dog. Tell me what dogs are. And one person will say, oh, they're these cute little things that are kind of like our children and we have to take care of them. And the next person will say, they're big animals with sharp teeth and I still have a scar from when a dog bit me really bad at age 12. And a third person will say, they're man's best friend. They're more loyal to you than any person is ever going to be.
Three very different meanings.
Yes. Don't you just, metaphors jump out. And I think in working with most people, and certainly in working with yourself, that it actually works better to just try to define the thing, because nobody spews out a dictionary definition. We spew out our metaphors about something when we're asked to define something. So pretend you're telling an alien, pretend you're describing it to someone who's never seen the outside world. Just kind of talk to yourself, or again, it's often even more helpful if you're working with a friend or a therapist who can kind of ask the questions, so you don't even have to think about how to craft that, and you just give out with your associations. So that's how good dream interpretation goes.
Sure. I'm watching the clock here. I have several more questions for you, Deirdre. How common are erotic dreams, either dreams about sex or having affairs or old boyfriends or old girlfriends? How common is that?
Well, dreams that contain an old boyfriend or girlfriend, I think, are much more common, or, you know, somebody you're attracted to or something. But dreams that are fairly literally about sex are a relatively small proportion of dreams, low single-digit percentages for most people. Although, just like nightmares, they're often some of the ones we take more notice of and may remember more 10 years later than just sort of dreaming about being at the office kind of dream. So they're relatively rare, and they're more common exactly when waking thought is the most focused on sexuality. They become very common as puberty hits, and they're most common for teens and early 20s, and they do diminish, not just as total dreams diminish over time, but as a proportion of dreams over time. So they're relatively rare, but they're often ones that people sort of label as more important to them. And if they're only writing some dreams down, would write down. So they're kind of an important part of our dream life, but literally they're a tiny bit of it.
I want to pick up on something you said earlier about if you're having sort of recurrent or repetitive dreams that don't feel good, or maybe are scary, or even in the nightmare category, that you can you can go to bed and say, okay, tonight I'm going to dream about puppy dogs and pussycats, and you can actually influence the content of your dreams?
Yes, and in all sorts of ways. You can, it can be as simple as, tonight in I want my dreams to be relaxed and pleasant. I really encourage people to explore anxiety dreams before they try to just make them go away, but I think it's perfectly legitimate. And during the pandemic, I was doing a lot of coaching people on just how to focus on visualizing positive dreams that you'd like to have tonight. But it can be, I want to dream about a particular question I have, or I want to dream an answer to a problem I've been struggling with. And you do something called dream incubation, where you come up with a simple phrase that's very simple, so it's likelier to get recalled by our dreaming mind and make it into our dream. And then, at least as important, you come up with some kind of visual image that represents the question or problem or person you want to dream about or type of dream you want to have. And after you repeat, I want to dream about X a few times, the phrase, you just hold that image as you're falling asleep, because our dreams are so visual that the visual request gets through very, very vividly. And if you're in the rare group of people who really don't have much visual image, who don't understand what the phrase "see something in your mind's eye" really means to other people, then you might want to have something really concrete on your bed table, like a photo is the simplest, or some little group of objects that represent your problem or question or intent for your dreams, and look at that just before you turn off the lights.
Well, Deirdre Barrett, we have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Connection to talk about dreams and dreaming. Thank you so much.
Okay, enjoyed being here.
Me too. And she's a psychologist, dream researcher, president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. And thank you for joining us today on The Connection. It airs every Friday and Sunday at noon right here on WHYY. You can download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcast. You're going to listen also on the WHYY app. You can follow us on Instagram and find us on Facebook. Check out our website, whyy.org/theconnection, for information about upcoming shows and to sign up for our newsletter. Debbie Builder produces The Connection. Al Banks, our engineer today. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thanks for joining us.